welcome to the Dellingpod with me, James Dellingpod. And I know I always say I'm excited about this week's special guest, but before I introduce him, a quick word on behalf of one of our excellent sponsors. A brilliant podcast deserves a brilliant sponsor, and we've got one in the form of Monetary Metals, our old friends Monetary Metals. I've had the CEO, Keith Wiener, on the podcast a couple of times to explain how he manages to enable you to own gold while yet having interest paid on it. But he does it by essentially lending the gold out to the jewelry industry, and that's how he gets your interest paid. So you have your gold holding, and then you get paid in interest also in gold. It's a great idea, and I recommend it. I've got some money invested in myself. You can earn 2 to 5% annually on your gold, supporting businesses in the gold industry. Or if you're an accredited investor, you could be eligible to earn even higher yields, double digits in their gold bond offerings. It's 100% physical, 100% yours, your metal, you're in control. If you don't like an opportunity, you can opt out at any time. So get on your own personal gold standard today with Monetary Metals. Visit monetary-metals.com/Dellingpole to learn more and get started opening an account. Excellent sponsors. Well, Mark Morano, welcome to the Dellingpod. Is this your first appearance, Mark? I think it might be.
I believe it is. There was one time, I think it was at Heartland in DC, where I was scheduled to appear on your show, but then I can't remember what happened. Things got crazy, and you were there on the radio row, so to speak, and we were moments away, and then we got interrupted, and then we never had it happen. So yeah, this is the first, I believe.
So this is shaming, because I should tell viewers and listeners, Mark and I go back a long way. From the days when I was really fighting in the climate war trenches, and Mark was standing with me shoulder to shoulder. We met in a lot of places, like in Madrid. Did you go to that thing in the Vatican once?
Yes, that's where we were together with Lord Christopher Monckton, and we went to the Vatican Climate Summit. And of course, you wrote that great article about Vatican heavies wanted to eject climate dissenters from the actual meeting. It was the UN was merging with the Vatican. I called it the unholy alliance between Pope Francis and all the forces against everything Christianity and the Catholic Church believe in. But there they were, right on the Vatican sacred ground, and we were there to cover it, and you were, and we had a great time there. And of course, what I remember is, of course, the Paris Climate Hustle debut, where you showed up in your tux at the last minute, and you were there for the red carpet arrival and the film premiere, and we had all the protesters, and you wrote up some smashing coverage of that event. And that's when, of course, they had the wanted posters up for all the climate skeptics all throughout the streets of Paris, including myself, for being climate criminals.
They did us a big favor, didn't they, by branding us as climate criminals. Yeah, I remember the French thing was weird, because I think it was not long after the that alleged terrorist outbreak. You know, people had been, hadn't they?
It was, I believe, yeah. It was like maybe 2 weeks before there was a big terror outbreak. In fact, yeah. Al Gore was doing one of his global warming live events in Paris the night it happened. And of course, it completely, you know, some of those events he literally online live, watching live, he had a couple dozen. So the few dozen people actually that may have cared, Al Gore had to cut it short, and he got no publicity out of it. But yeah, that was right before that. So Paris was in sort of a terror lockdown, if you will.
And then the Vatican thing. Sorry, well, we're not going to, this isn't going to be a whole episode of reminiscences.
Yeah, I remember. I think the Vatican thing had been earlier that year, if I'm not mistaken, or is the following spring. I believe it was earlier that year.
The Vatican thing was what I liked about the Vatican was normally you have to pay a special, you know, admission price to go around the Vatican museum and stuff.
Right? No, just kidding. No,
all that stuff. And the Sistine Chapel. But yeah. We got in free. And we saw different parts of the Vatican that you wouldn't normally get to see. But what really struck me was in the anteroom where we were all, we miserable, lowly hacks were waiting to be admitted. There was this row of people serving espressos out of, you know, proper Italian espresso machines. And I thought, this is a civilized country. Yeah. That... Anyway,
yes,
we've moved on since all that, Mark. I've just been editing the book I wrote a while back, Watermelons, about, you know, I'm doing a revised edition. I'm not going to change the central contents, because I think it's a snapshot of an era, but I'm going to top and tail it with new chapters.
I'm going to guess, like 2012, 13. When would you release that?
Yeah, it was about then.
I remember you came to the Heartland Conference, a big climate summit, with your books and signings.
Yeah. What has struck me rereading the book was, okay, how much I got right. I realized even then that the whole climate thing was a scam. It was a lie. There was no science to back up any of it. Yeah. It wasn't just like, well, maybe we should think hard about this, you know, look into it, this global warming thing. It was absolutely an out and out war on reality, on the taxpayer, on the energy user, on freedoms, everything. There was no scientific basis at all. So I got that right. What I didn't get right was I was sort of optimistic about the sword of truth, the cleansing effects of sunlight.
You thought it would fade away or something? Is that what
I thought once we'd shown them up to be a bunch of lying shysters, and the scientists were lying, and the governments were lying, and the industry was profiteering from a non-existent problem, I thought they're never going to get past this. But here we are, what, 11, 12 years on, they're carrying on, but they've got worse, haven't they?
It's totally changed. And by the way, I was like you. I agreed with you. Your book was great. I agreed with the exact assessment, because I was predicting at that point they were about to abandon. This is not too long after Climategate, when it really looked like the end, like the whole charade. But they were able to rebuild. But all that's irrelevant, because they were sort of humming along. Al Gore did his sequel 2017, and it just flopped. You know, polar bears are disappearing, as Susan Crockford, the biologist, says. But only from Al Gore's books and movies. They dropped the polar bear in the late teens because they were at or near historic population highs. They never counted as many. Even the Inuit people said they weren't endangered. So they just sort of disappeared. You don't see polar bears as a mascot anymore. But they were frustrated. So the big rise, I guess you'd say, would be Greta Thunberg.
Yes, and that's true.
She took the world on by storm for a few short years. And then COVID hit. And it's amazing to me, having followed this debate now, since my first global warming interview was either late 99 or year 2000. I interviewed Jerry Malman, now deceased, a government federal scientist, a hostile interview about climate change. I've never seen the debate change. It changed almost overnight in March of 2020 when the World Health Organization went and said, copy China. China knows what they're doing. If you want to beat a virus, follow China. So the whole world, the once free Western world, copied totalitarian China. And overnight, everything, the wackiest dreams of the climate activists came true. An end of airline travel, end of car travel. Greta Thunberg got her wish. Kids were skipping school permanently, or at least for years in many, especially here in the US. I don't think Europe closed as much schools as we did here for years.
We did pretty well.
Teachers unions, yeah. So, and then, of course, you know, the idea of planned recessions to fight global warming. Well, what's a lockdown but a government-mandated planned recession? Hey, there's an emergency. We're going to lock everything down. Almost to a word. And then if you, of course, criticized any aspect of COVID, any aspect of the medical doctors, you were immediately censored, canceled, deplatformed. So immediately I recognized that everything I saw in the COVID debate that happened unfolding beginning in March of 2020, I had already learned decades watching the climate debate. And there's an old book, I think 1985, everything I needed to know, I learned in kindergarten. It kind of reminded me of that. So I knew it. I knew the whole playbook. You would have the dissent. We had the most incredibly distinguished scientists in the COVID world speaking out against the lockdowns and the medical tyranny. Nobel Prize winners like Michael Levitt, epidemiologists from Stanford, Harvard, the most prestigious schools in the country, John Hopkins, and they were called virus deniers and shut down. So I saw it all. And what happened was, At first, the climate activists were jealous. And you can see it in their eyes. There was Jamie Margolis, a Teen Vogue, a climate activist who's testified in front of the U.S. Congress. Why not? She said, if we can shut down the world for a virus, we can do the same thing for climate. And that's a verbatim quote. And then John Kerry said, the parallels between COVID and climate are screaming at us. They're both two crises denied. And then, of course, immediately the World Economic Forum recognizes by June of 2020, Klaus Schwab gave his famous, it's time for a great reset. We have a narrow, short window of opportunity. And that's when your Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, and the Canadian Justin Trudeau and all the European leaders immediately started parroting, build back better, a great reset. And, you know, and that is when everything really changed, because they realized, I'll end it right here. I don't want to filibuster, but they realized that if you declare an emergency, you can become a dictator overnight. And that's what they did. And so that's why in that moment, they quit caring about, you know, the Green New Deal was introduced in Congress, never voted on. There was never, they never had formal committee hearings. There was never a scheduled vote. There was never people flooding in switchboards. There were never town halls, constituent meetings, nothing. They now know that the way to impose the climate agenda is by force and by bypassing democracy with corporate government collusion, emergency powers, executive orders, and through every executive agency's unelected bureaucracy is the king. And they learn this in real time from watching it all happen with COVID. The most consequential decisions of our life, whether a church would be open, whether you could leave your house, your freedom of movement, your job, your school, your medical procedure canceled, weddings, funerals canceled, all were made without a single ounce of democracy in the Western world. It was all decreed by emergency, and then immediately unelected bureaucrats, public health, and prime ministers, presidents, governors, mayors, executive orders. That really appealed to the climate activists. And that's where they are now. So just to wrap it up real quick, 200 medical journals right before Dubai, led by the British Medical Journal, announced that climate change has to be part of a public health emergency. They want the World Health Organization to declare it so. World Health is meeting in May in Geneva, Switzerland. And I'm trying to get credentialed as we speak to attend that, to actually roll climate change into a pandemic treaty and these amendments. This is frightening stuff, because they don't need you to believe science. They don't need you to believe carbon dioxide is destroying the earth. They don't care about that debate. They don't need you to have a congressman vote for a bill. They're way beyond that with environment, social governance, diversity, equity, inclusion, all of these buzzwords you hear. It's all the new form of the climate agenda, which is now the public health and climate, because climate couldn't stand on its own. People just ultimately didn't care about 50 years sea level or polar bears. But they care if you're killing grandma. They care if dying of a virus. So the fear from that, even though it was unjustified, is now merging with climate, and climate will be part of public health. And that's where they're heading with this whole thing. That's how the whole debate has changed. We no longer really, no one really cares about convincing you anymore about anything. They don't need you to, they don't need to convince you a shit.
Yeah, I was thinking the climate scare thing really started ramping up, didn't it, after the Rio Earth Summit, which was what, 1992? Yes. So you had from 1992, ClimateGate was in 2007, I think.
Was it? No, it was 2009. Into
2009, yeah.
End of 2000. It was Copenhagen's summit got ruined by ClimateGate, yeah. That was 2009.
So they had quite a long time to try and scare the public into abandoning their selfish carbon guzzling lifetime and all this. And you're right that in the space of 1 year during the so-called pandemic, which wasn't, I don't believe, they managed to scare everyone to doing all the things that they'd been unsuccessfully trying to get them to do since the Rio Earth Summit.
And they did it without persuading anyone. They just scared the shit out of people and then used authoritarianism, and it worked. People complied. And it was Leslie Hoyle, I think his House of Commons, had the greatest encapsulation of what happened. He actually said he is amazed at how compliant the public was for all these COVID restrictions without any pushback. And he said, now is the time basically to move quickly and do the same thing with climate. So they got one thing, the dumbest, lowest level, stupid politicians, and I'm not saying Leslie Hoyle's ex, I don't know much about him, but the lowest level politicians understand one thing, government force works. And that's all, you could have the IQ of a grapefruit, and any politician understands that. And so they gravitate toward that. And that's why this is such a brilliant plan for them.
I have to say, the people of the world, not just the British people, but across the world, did not show themselves in a very good light during that. They were taken for a massive ride. It's starting to come out now. People have been, I mean, as you probably know, I'm completely down the rabbit hole with the people who've been branded by the ruling elites as crazies. But I hear stories about, for example, you remember, I'm sure you had this in America, in DC as well, ambulance sirens all the time during COVID.
Yes.
So a few of my of people like, you know, I'm acquainted with, one of them actually decided to follow the ambulances to see where they were going. And you know what they were doing?
Just going in loops, I'm guessing.
Yeah, they were going in loops with their sirens going. And somebody else, in fact, I know of two people who actually went into hospitals during this period where we were told that the nurses and doctors like the triage, deciding who could live and who could die. They were overwhelmed. They barely had time to make TikTok videos during their dance routines. I mean, it was awful, awful, awful. And they went into the hospitals, you know, they managed to sort of barge their way past the staff and, you know, almost got sort of in great trouble for doing so. And they discovered empty wards. People who'd been who had to go into hospital for other conditions also report that they had empty wards, and yet the British public were persuaded by the media, by the TV, by these showy press conferences, by Boris Johnson, and you know these kind of plausibly superficial medical guys, and the PSYOP. I don't know what PSYOPs you had in America. We had this PSYOP whereby every Thursday, this was straight out of Chinese, you know, Chinese Communist Party programming. People would gather on their doorstep at 7 p.m. to bang their pots and pans in celebration of the heroes and heroines of the National Health Service.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Did you have anything like that in America?
Yeah, we had similar things where people would go out and praise them. I don't remember pots and pans, but there was all kinds of stuff in front of hospitals and people with signs and making like a little demonstration in support of them or even singing and thanking them, yes.
So we have this thing called the Tavistock Institute, which is basically, it's responsible for all ways of kind of shifting the mindset of the populace in a particular direction. It's you know, screwing with the people's brains, using the media to manipulate them. The Tavistock Institute thinks up all this stuff, and I'm sure they thought up this pots and pans PSYOP, and the ambulances and the way that the conferences were staged, every aspect of it. If only the climate change, well, I say if only. It's my theory, I don't know whether you agree with me, that the ultimately the people behind the COVID thing are the same people ultimately behind the climate change thing.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the World Health Organization declared a climate change a existential threat in 2018 or 19. So they were all set for the same exact type tactics. And when you look at what happened with COVID, it's the exact model of climate. You have a kernel of truth, you know, CO2 can theoretically warm the atmosphere, and more CO2 might equal a warmer world, all things being equal in a laboratory setting, but the world is not a laboratory setting, but that's neither here nor there. But you had a virus that was spreading, clearly, it was a little different because you lost your sense, I had it, you lost your sense of smell, I don't remember that ever happening, and I talked to a lot of people, and that's not a common thing. So there definitely was a virus. But using your own British Neil Ferguson, he did the old sort of James Hansen, Al Gore move, James Hansen being an asshole climate scientist. They came up with, you get an existing little thing, and then you come up with the scariest modeling projections you can ever imagine. And he came up with Spanish toll like death, 25 million, I think it was 20, 25 million dead, unless we copy China. And so that was the exact same thing. And this is what Al Gore's movie was about. This is what the UN climate panel, this is going to happen, catastrophic apocalypse, unless we go full Marxist. So that was exactly what, unless we lock down with COVID. So it was the exact same model. And of course, the UN was involved, the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum. The greatest thing to come out of this was the greatest soundbite in the history of politics relating to climate of the last 5 years was Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who I interviewed in 2014 at the New York City Climate March. And he said, we need to jail climate deniers, the CEOs of energy companies at The Hague, the World Criminal Court, with three square meals and a cot. They belong there. And he said he wishes there was a law you could punish skeptical politicians, denier politicians. Well, fast forward, he's red-pilled by COVID and what the governments are doing, and it's the same institutions. So when he's announcing for president, I'm like, how is he going to handle this? He can't come out and say climate's a big deal, but COVID was a con. He came out and actually said, this is my favorite quote of his in the history of his quotes, and he actually said, I will not talk about climate change during my presidential run. I don't care if you believe in it. I am not going to bring it up because climate change has been hijacked by the United Nations and World Economic Forum for totalitarian control. Boom! That was it. Good night. Good night, folks. The most alarmist, authoritarian government pusher of climate scare has now completely backed off Robert F. Kennedy. I'm actually considering voting for him over Donald Trump here in the United States, but I probably won't because of some of his other environmental views. But still, impressive. And that just goes to show you it's the same people. And you have confirmation of what you just said, James, by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the environmental activist. By the way, he was forced, it was a Reason magazine interview, they took him to task for his interview with me. And his campaign reached out to me, and I gave him the raw, unedited footage. And we went back and forth. He's supposed to be coming on my podcast at some point, but we'll see. But anyway, he was forced to apologize. He said, looking back, it probably wasn't the best thing he could have said about jailing, you know, energy CEOs and punishing politicians who dissent. So he's come a long way. And I think that just gives you an idea of, wow. So, and that's a whole other topic I'd like to talk to you about later, is the former people we used to hate. Russell Brand, I always thought of him as a lefty Hollywood socialist. He's one of my heroes now. I'm not like him, but I love the guy.
Yeah, I'm not convinced by Brand. You see, the thing is, you must have seen, Mark, let's not get bogged down with this one, but you must have seen that the people really behind this stuff have got every avenue covered. So they've got the people pushing their agenda, and they've got the people pretending to fight back against their agenda.
You think he's okay? I see what you're getting at. Yeah, you think he's a pretend, like a plant to sort of make it look like he's a controlled controlled opposition is what we call that here. Yeah,
He's controlled opposition in the way that, for example, Trump, who's been sold to us as the kind of the route out of this mess. He's not. He's another trap, I think. But we'll maybe get back to that later on. Have you noticed the thing I didn't mention, and I'm going to mention it in my last chapter, my sort of revised chapter of Watermelons? I hadn't realized that one family is behind the creation of the World Health Organization. One family decided in the 1940s to position environmentalism as this key issue which crossed borders and justified supranational action, leading to one world government. It's the Rockefellers.
I was about to say Rockefeller. Yeah, you could, a close second would be Getty, but yeah, David Rockefeller, actually, back, you can go back to the 1970s, was pushing the exact agenda as we have today. In fact, Rockefeller has its hand in both climate and the whole COVID. They were actually, yeah, in 2010, Rockefeller sponsored, it wasn't a pandemic, but they were called pandemic exercise planning, where they talked about mask mandates, lockdowns, like shutting down the internet. So Rockefeller has been all over this. And this is one of the things people have to realize. This is a concentration of power. The lockdowns, first of all, brought more wealth, the greatest transfer of wealth from poor middle class to the wealthy, the greatest number creation of billionaires. And this serves the interest, because the less mom and pop, less independence, less smaller business, the less there is opposition to the Rockefellers, to the Gettys, to the Bill Gates, to the Michael Bloomberg, who's a big player in this, to Richard Branson, who's investing in the lab-grown meat with Bill Gates. And
yeah, that did well, didn't it? That investment. What was the company? Beyond Meat.
That was the fake vegetable meat, but now that's gone nowhere. No. Even CNN nutritionist said Beyond Meat is like 25 processed ingredients, all these bad oils, high fat, and they said you're better off eating a lean hamburger or fish. Like, why would anyone eat this? They couldn't even get the liberal media really to promote that, and the sales were nowhere. No, lab grown meat is their new disgusting brainchild. It's stem cells from a cow, sheep, pig mixed with fetal blood, put into a petri dish, put into a steel vat, allowed to fester, no eyes, no brain, no bone structure, this amorphous blob like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, additives, coloring, and antibiotics. And then at the end, and this is the pièce de résistance, they print it on a 3D printer. And it looks like meat. And it technically is meat because genetically it's derived from the stem cells. This is being promoted. It's actually approved for human consumption first time in 2023. It's getting approved in Europe. And of course, the others, we can talk about that when we break this down. I'll go through what they're doing with food. But that is one of the biggest things. And that's Richard Branson, Bill Gates funding. Bill Gates is the largest single farmland owner. Jeff Bezos is about to pass Bill Gates, if he hasn't already, and buying up farmland. These are the billionaire class, including the Rockefellers, who've been trying to control energy for decades. And have been controlling energy in the whole debate. But now you have the new kids on the block, if you will. I mean, Bill Gates is a relatively new kid. He wasn't around 100 years ago like the Rockefellers. And you have the Richard Bransons, and you have the Bloombergs, and you have the Bezos. They're all involved, and I see them. I think you mentioned Madrid. They were all, at least Bloomberg and Gore were all at the at least it was Scotland, actually. Scotland, they were just at, they attend these UN conferences as well, these billionaires, the billionaire class.
Yeah, they like Scotland because you've got the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. You've got lots of ritual sacrifice that they love.
Yes. Yeah,
they're particularly drawn to the old country. But so what? Tell me about more of the horrors that are coming up with the war on farming and stuff.
All right. Well, so what's happened is, so let's just go back a little timeline. So 2020, they announced the Great Reset. All the Western leaders like lemmings follow along with this. Other than Donald Trump at the time. And one interjection, I think Donald Trump was an accidental victor, meaning I think he was, like they say, he's a game show host. He cared about his country. He was a businessman. I don't think he expected to win. I don't think anyone thought he was going to win. I thought they just thought he was a joke. He won. He had then appointed all these bad people. His instincts were good, but he really couldn't do that much. I mean, you can't drain a swamp in Washington, D.C. He's one president. Every agency, the EPA, the Defense Department, Pentagon, they were all against everything he wanted to do. And I have all these examples and stories. He approved, by the way. Donald Trump personally approved. I talked to Will Happer, the physicist from Princeton.
We like Will.
He actually left the private sector to go work in Washington. He was miserable. He hated it. He left New Jersey, left his home. This is a guy who's almost 80 years old at the time, maybe 81 or something. And he went and lived in D.C. to be a science advisor to Donald Trump for the explicit purpose of working on a climate committee to push back against the United Nations. It'd be the first official report since 1988, since the government UN climate panel was formed, that there'd be pushback. Multiple occasions, Donald Trump personally approved it in front of Will Happer. It was approved. The commission was going to happen. Committee, they were going to have people like Judith Curry, Richard Lindzen, and a whole host, Roy Spencer, John Christie. It had been about two dozen of prominent scientists. And Larry Kudlow, his top economic advisor, bragged to me at CPAC that he killed that presidential commission. This is what happened with Trump. He wanted to pull troops out of Afghanistan years earlier. He was yes to death, but then the bureaucracy and the officials he appointed in many cases wouldn't go along with it. So Will Happer actually says, well, Donald Trump approved it. Donald Trump said in front of Will Happer, what happened? I approved that. Like, oh, we're sorry. So we decided it's going to wait until after the election. It's not a good time. And of course, after the election, they didn't win. But I just bring that up because, and I think Donald Trump now, because they've destroyed his life, destroyed his friends, he may be declaring bankruptcy, they threaten him with jail. He's as close as we're ever going to get to a non-actor, non-controlled opposition. He may have started out that way, just sort of on a lark. He's running for president. But I think he's an accident of history. They didn't expect him to win. And the reaction to him tells me that I think he's now real. I was with you. I think it was a lark. I think he was not, you know, I didn't trust him at all. Like when I first heard him, he's very establishment. You know, he's an NBC News entertainer, NBC. Anyway, moving along though. So Donald Trump loses the election. And of course, that's a big part. I just had an interview with a guy who did a serious analysis. In America, the write-in ballots that were done because of the COVID restrictions, for the first time in U.S. history, I can't remember, it was like 75% of people didn't vote in person. I don't know if that percent is right, but it's the highest ever. And so all these unverified mail-in ballots in six key states, very slim margins, gave Joe Biden the election. The analysis are all showing that these were unverified. We've known for decades you don't have unverified mail-in ballots, that people can just be these ballots that turn up. So I think Donald Trump probably won re-election, but that'll get you a cup of coffee. Neither here nor there. My point being, though, after that, Joe Biden comes in and he announces that every cabinet agency is a climate agency. He does this, the greatest number series of executive orders. They then somehow get the Inflation Reduction Act passed because of one senator, Chuck, from West Virginia, Chuck Manchin, got persuaded by Bill Gates that they were going to build all this stuff and he was going to get other goodies for West Virginia, only about half of which happened. But that is now going to be reaching $1 billion, and there's no end in sight, solar, wind subsidies. So it goes back to something you said earlier. You said you thought it was going to go away, and I did too, but yeah, it can't go away. When something's funded, like this is, we are in the United States, we are structurally funded to promote climate solutions, green energy, probably for decades in the future, for $1 billion plus. It's just going to keep coming and coming, and there's always going to be takers that want to get what it, we find the model here for green businesses. You have all these companies come in, former board of directors, grab these government, you know, hundreds of millions in the case of Solyndra or anything else. They go belly up in, you know, 6 months, 18 months, within 2 years, they're gone. They pay themselves all this money. They declare bankruptcy. Then they can go join a new board, get the next grant, because they're perpetual grants constantly coming. It's the greatest boon. I kick myself. I wake up every day and say, what the fuck is wrong with me? Why aren't I on these boards? Yeah. Why aren't I on the pay here? You know, because this is, people are making a ton of money. These are Democrat donors, even CBS News admitted. Republicans don't want to be out. So a lot of Republicans support climate solutions, and they want to do carbon capture and burying CO2 and planting trees and the same kind of boondoggle stuff. In fact, the guy running against Trudeau really disappointed me. His name is Pierre Poilievre, if I'm saying his name right. He's supposed to be the big conservative hero. Listen to him on climate. He's pathetic. He's like, oh, yes, climate's a problem, and we're going to be planting trees, and we're going to have carbon capture. It's like, oh, so you're just going to play their little game, but you're not going to be. So anyone concerned about climate's going to look at him and say, well, you're not, your solutions aren't serious enough. I want the people that are going to shut down the entire economy again. But anyway, I digress. Go ahead.
No, you make a good point there, Mark, that I've never heard a politician say, look, climate change isn't actually a problem. They're lying. It's not a problem. They always have to pay lip service to the to the climate goddess. You know,
Trump is as close as I think we got to a Western leader ever doing that in power. Anyway,
yeah, but he was always going to be. I don't share your. I think he made some bad picks.
I walked away from Trump in March of 2020 when he fell for 2 weeks to flatten the curve, and he signed the executive order declaring COVID an emergency, which followed, all of that followed, let every governor, mayor become dictators overnight. Donald Trump gave a medal to Anthony Fauci. Donald Trump did Operation Warp Speed, rushed an insane vaccine. He still to this day will claim he saved 20 million lives, bigger than the Spanish flu. Donald Trump did that vaccine that suppressed all other medicine. We got to the point where my daughter wanted to get ivermectin one time, and they're like, CVS Pharmacy, Walgreens, no, we're not giving that out. Your doctor's wrong. It's like, is this America? The corporate government collusion. And then, of course, they mandated the vaccine. And Donald Trump still gets booed by his own crowd. It was getting booed. At least he's backed away. He was clueless. And I still say this, the greatest single blunder of any U.S. president in my lifetime, last 50 plus years, was him. It was two different things. Signing the COVID emergency declaration, which gave emergency executive tyrannical powers, and falling for the being duped for 2 weeks to flatten the curves, 10 days to stop the spread, which we now know because his COVID coordinator, Deborah Birx, said that they made it up. They duped Donald Trump, and Anthony Fauci and her were just trying to buy time so that they could keep the country locked down. And you can see the press conference with Donald Trump where Anthony Fauci and her exchanged this look of glee that they'd hoodwinked Donald Trump to go along with this. Anyway, Trump's never accounted for any of that. In fact, he's gone as far, you got me here trashing Trump. He went as far as saying that Mario Cuomo in New York did better than Ron DeSantis in Florida. He's got a missing bolt. Several bolts when it comes to the whole COVID lockdown and vaccine. And I don't know. I've never forgiven him. That's why I say I've always considered RFK Jr. to voting for. But then he's got his own set.
Are you a Catholic, Mark? I'm guessing from your sermon. Yeah. You know who I think Trump is, I'm afraid.
Who's that?
He begins with an A and ends in Antichrist.
Oh.
I used to be a fan, yeah. But you can tell.
I don't know.
He's the false light.
You'd have to convince me that why does the establishment hate him so much? They're going to this far just to make
a deal. Just very quickly, because we're here to talk about climate change and stuff, really. Yeah, yeah. But the deal is that, you know, you've read your revelation. The point about the Antichrist is he's a charismatic figure that he comes along after really bad stuff has happened. Everyone's going, this war and pestilence and stuff, we need, you know, this guy has got the solutions. So the Biden administration is part of that. The wars we're about to get are part of that. The famines that are being engineered by, maybe you can talk about that, the destruction of, okay, so you've mentioned Gates and Bezos buying up farmland.
Yeah, well,
but you've also got the destruction of agricultural processing depots, of livestock. Tell me a bit about that.
Okay, well, first of all, there have been many of these farms and meat, especially during the COVID lockdowns. We already had supply chain issue. Part of this is a PSYOP. Part of it is, you know, who knows? You can't pin down who's actually causing these fires, but it's essentially creating a meat rationing situation. So in the United States, you can go to a restaurant, especially during the three worst years of COVID lockdowns. Steaks were 3 and 4 times what they ever were. There was meat rationing. And during this is when they were pushing the Beyond Meat. This is when they started pushing heavily. They began the insect push of eating. And by the way, Giorgia Meloni, only European leader I'm aware of, said Italian pasta won't have bugs in it, won't have insects in it. And so part of this, and this also occurred with the COVID lockdowns by government design. They didn't need to burn the factories down. They made them so limited and restricted. Then this was a huge source of proteins. This was how they did it. And then the same thing happens in the Netherlands. The net zero regulations target, I believe the Netherlands is the number one exporter of meat in all of Europe. Well, why were they going after that? They were going after nitrogen-based fertilizer for one thing, which would collapse yields. Crop yields. And the second thing they go after is methane under net zero. And those things, that's plentiful food and meat, because you're worried about the belching and the farting of cows and sheep and all the livestock animals. You control the amount of crops and all the livestock. You control farming, okay? And that's what we're seeing in Europe. And that's the greatest sign of hope from the entire, every country in Europe with all these farmers revolting. But here's the bottom line on agriculture. It's the intentional collapse of plentiful food. It's food rationing, it's meat rationing, all, and this is coming out directly, World Economic Forum said in 2016, meat will be a rare treat, no longer a regular food. And that's their goal. And by the way, it'll still, when they say rare, it doesn't mean you'll eat it, you or I'll eat it rarely. It means they'll still be serving it at World Economic, because someone went in last year in January and they were serving meat at almost every reception and function. There was a lot, I guess it was Turning Point USA sent undercover activists, and they were reporting on all the menus. There were no bugs there. There were no fake meat or lab grown meat there. They were eating the highest cuts of culinary meat. And by the way, the same thing happened in Dubai when I was there at the UN Climate Summit. They had lavish meats, Colby steak from Japan and all that. There's no sense of irony there. But in terms of agriculture, you have, in the case of the Netherlands, almost 10,000. The estimates were family-run, small, generational farms were going to be shut down. This is going back about 2 years now. And the farmers said no. It was in order to meet net zero compliance. This is what all the virtues say. When you see these leaders go to the United Nations summits, I'll limit the Earth's temperature to 2 degrees. I'll do 1.5. Well, I'll beat you there. You know, it's like an auction, right? Well, that's all good virtue signaling and bullshit politics. But then they come home and these treaties have a meaning, and then the courts start ruling. In the case of the Netherlands, the court order was for the agricultural sector has to reduce emissions. So they have climate compliance costs. Well, the small guys can't afford it. Who can afford these costs? Oh, billionaire-backed equity asset, foreign country. I'm sure China here in the U.S. I don't know how much farmland China's buying in Europe, but in the U.S., they're a close second or third behind Bill Gates. There's actually fear of a Chinese land monopoly here in the United States, as reported by our mainstream corporate media. This isn't according to conspiracy theorists. Politico reported that. So what happens is the farmers in the Netherlands, of course, fought back. They formed their own political party, the BBB. They're now in the parliament, and they've stopped that in the Netherlands. Well, that, but the idea there was if you soften us up, you ration the food, we're more likely to start eating the bugs. So you have schools in Australia, and I think it was school, I can't remember which country in Europe, they've given out these cricket-based snacks, insect-based snacks that look like potato chips. They're salt, grease. You can't see the bug, but they're based on the powder. They give it to the kids, and they then say, and this is a quote, go home and pester your parents that bug eating is just fine and you want to eat more bugs and it's good for the earth. That's a psyop to do to elementary school kids. The parents aren't even aware of it. The kids are, so now the kid for the rest of their life, oh yeah, I used to eat bugs at school. They tasted great. They taste like potato chips. They were barbecue flavor. And so they're pushing that. And the reason they can push that is because of the high cost of meat. And now they're pushing. Bill Gates has stated publicly, again, this isn't a conspiracy theory. He told the MIT Technology Review that he believes the entire Western world, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, US, should not eat any animal agriculture. It should all be food going to the synthetic meat. And of course, he wants to essentially end animal agriculture on farming and move it not into a, you know, we're not talking about factory food, like, oh, that's processed, it comes in a box. He wants to move it from the farm to the laboratory with scientists and steel vats and petri dishes and 3D printers. That's what his stated goal is, and he's very public about it, and people just don't pay attention and listen to what he has to say. And Bill Gates is evil for a number of reasons. He's the number one funder to the World Health Organization. So if they have a pandemic treaty, a Bill Gates-funded scientist can declare a pandemic, and we could have global instant lockdowns and bans on interstate travel and vaccine mandates and mask mandates and et cetera. And Bill Gates is involved in geoengineering the climate. He's given billions to Harvard University to inject chemicals in the sky to block out the sun. And of course, Bill Gates is involved heavily in our foods policy. We got, again, lab-grown meat approved for human consumption for the first time in the U.S. He's gobbling up the farmland. And so he's a huge player in all this. But anyway, that's the agenda with food, is to collapse plentiful food, ration it, make us more reliant on bug eating, lab-grown meat, and of course, the more and more processed meat. And the idea is farming's been around for thousands of years. Suddenly in the year 2024, the earth can't handle it. So we have to start, you know, they want to expel, just like they did in COVID, the small businesses. They want to expel small, middle-sized, family-run farms because they don't go along with the agenda. The more they can get that corporate government collusion and the equity asset and all these big buyers, they know they can control because they all work together for the same goal, which is essentially, it's the history of mankind. I mean, the entire history of our planet, of civilization, has been the ruling class governing elite always looking for reasons why the rest of us can't be free. And as I detail in my book, The Great Reset, it's always some kind of crisis or emergency. And it's actually, if you go back to the Roman Republic's descent into an empire, if you go to the Middle Ages, if you go to Nazi Germany, the greatest abuses of civil liberties occur during times of emergency declarations by government. And that includes 9/11, the terrorism declaration, and all the, you know, the biosecurity surveillance state we created. That includes the COVID emergency declaration. And of course, Joe Biden in the United States wants to do a climate emergency, give him 130 executive powers, bypassing democracy. So this is where we are. And that's on the food. I still haven't talked about energy and transportation, because transportation is a big one too. But when the World Health Organization said copy China, and we did, we're like lemmings, we all copied China during the COVID lockdowns. This had followed, and I detail this in my book, 2 decades at least, of world leaders, opinion makers, our academic elite, media praising China's one-party rule. Tom Friedman, on the pages of the New York Times, said China's one-party democracy was able to do the right things. They were enlightened. They were great for the earth because they didn't have the messiness of democracy. You had the Cristina Figueres, the UN climate chief, say that the centralized, you know, transformation was the way to go, and China was doing it right, and democracy was a fight. You had Justin Trudeau say that he admired China's basic dictatorship because they could, you know, just impose good green policies. You had the Apple CEO say aligns. Anyway, I could go on and on, but I detail all that. And so what happened was, people say, what's the Great Reset? I have one sentence answer. The Great Reset is the once free Western world copying the one party rule of China. And that's exactly what happened. We no longer, the most consequential decisions were decided by democracy. They were all decided by a one party state at that point, declare an emergency, and public health officers and you know, elected leaders would rule over you. Wake up, in the case of Australia, you'd have snap lockdowns. You wake up every day like, oh, I think I can go outside. Oh, there's a snap lockdown. The case count's too high. It was insane. So anyway, all that's where we are now. And then, of course, there's energy continuing collapse of that. And then the transportation is a huge one with the 15-minute cities and the airline restrictions and the cars restrictions.
Yeah. Well, tell me about this. I know you've got to go in about quarter of an hour, but you yeah. Being Marana, you can cover stuff in, you can cram into 15 minutes what others would take an hour to do. So I want to know what, because I'm worried about, you know, how many more trips abroad am I going to be able to take before they shut down the whole shebang? What are the plans?
All right. Well, first of all, BBC, two separate articles. Actually, one of them said that it's not a question of if, but when airline travel is severely restricted. And then they said, imagine a flying free world. Now, the reason I bring up BBC is this is that corporate government collusion. This tells you the mindset of the ruling class. This is their goal. So their goal is to make it so that, you know, that make the seaside vacation a thing of the past. You know, you might get something once every 5 years, only the ruling class wealthy. When Bill Gates in January 21 said the COVID lockdowns had to continue longer and that people had basically had to be locked in their homes, no job, couldn't go to school, he was in the same week making a bid on the largest private jet transport company in the world. He knew he and his pals were still going to be flying around. Well, let's take airline travel first. A climate lockdown is not theoretical. It's something happening here and now with airline travel. France, in May of this 2023, announced a ban on flights of 2.5 hours or less directly to solve climate change or to address climate change. This ban made it so if your flight was less than 2.5 hours, you were forced to go by car, bus, or train. There was no such restriction on private jets. That's point one. Now, the EU is all excited. There's multiple proposals to even shorten that more and make it EU-wide. Other countries are interested, Germany, I think Austria. There's a whole movement to just say, yeah, you can't fly. We have activists in the United States, Eric Holthuis, who said, in a declared climate emergency, which we are in, you should only be able to fly when it's morally justifiable. Okay, now what does that mean? Well, let's go to CNN. CNN just last fall suggested, had a huge article, huge headline, carbon passports for travel, where the government will start count. You have an accounting thing. It's like a carbon footprint. You took 5 airline flights. That's too many. You want to go to a vacation? No, not this year. You're going to a funeral. We'll allow that to go by, but that could impact your vacation. We're monitoring all your travel. This is actually now the corporate media, BBC, see, reporting on this openly. Bloomberg News had a huge article. Climate compliance costs will make cheap airline travel a thing of the past. We know where they're going with this. You can still get your special. You can still fly right now, but we know where they're going. We know where they're headed. And they're also headed, you look at the case of electric cars in the United States. Gavin Newsom, governor of California, issues an executive order banning gas-powered cars by 2035. California Air Resources Board, unelected bureaucrats come up with the timetable, start implementing it. In the U.S., 18 states have trigger laws that they follow whatever California does because they're such a leader on environmentalism. Then you have the Biden EPA, which unelected bureaucrats are determining that they're going to go after gas-powered cars through fuel economy standards, which are going to amount to a de facto ban. Then you have Nicholas Stern at a World Bank meeting say, we're going to have to look at ending financing at the automaker level for the creation of gas-powered cars. Then you have large corporate banks led by one, as reported by the UK Guardian, I believe, in Australia saying, we're not going to give out car loans eventually for people who buy gas-powered cars. Then you have, I'm not finished. Then you have cities in Colorado, California, banning the creation of new gas stations to save the planet and to limit people's travel. So you have the most consequential decision since the Model T. Not a single legislator, even California, there wasn't an ounce of democracy. No one voted to start phasing out the gas-powered cars. But it didn't matter because electric cars are so wonderful and great. We have Joe Biden get billions to do a national charging grid. After 3 years, one charging station has been built. They want a national charging grid because, hey, the next pandemic, You don't need to issue stay-at-home orders. You can just, once all the gas power cuts, you can just shut off the national grid and people are going to be staying. This is the administration who seriously considered a ban on interstate travel. So this is where we are just in terms of the car and, of course, the EU. Then, of course, all the blowback is every automaker's come out and said this is a disaster. Buick dealers here in the U.S. don't even want to sell them. The rental car agencies are getting rid of a third or more of their EVs because they're saying no, there's no consumer demand, high maintenance costs. They're huge in the Chicago winter. They're dying. Electric school buses are failing. Gavin Newsom, after he declared the gas-powered car ending and EV mandates, within 3 days, he issues a warning to Californians. We don't have enough electricity. Please don't recharge your car for a couple of days. So state with no electricity mandates cars that drive on electricity. Then you have the whole movement led by the World Economic Forum and others about these 15-minute cities, one of them there in Oxford. And you know, one of the things you can do if these fact checkers that you hear about, like the way I wrote my book, The Great Reset, was I always looked at the fact checks because the truth is damning enough. And most of the fact checks actually have it in there, but they lead with bullshit. So in the case of 15-minute cities, they'll say something like, oh, well, someone comes outlandish claim. Of course, that's nowhere in here. And here's the actual documents. They put all the links in. And then I started following all the links in the case of Oxford. You're allowed to leave like 94 times a year. And as of right now, there's a certain small penalty which can be revoked and changed at any time. And that's another way they impose totalitarianism. They come up with something that's like the income tax. We're only going to have 1%. It's only going to be on the wealthiest. Why wouldn't we vote for this? Why? Because the second it's in, all bets are off, you fucking moron. And that's what they've done here. So you have the 15-minute cities. It's a freedom of movement issue. They're very clear about that. You'll go nowhere. You'll be happy. The World Economic Forum loves that. They want us all. And this is what they call us, useless eaters. And of course, the continued collapse of our energy is occurring as well. Sorry. I'm exhausted.
I tell you what amazes me, Mark, that if you were, okay, put yourself in the position of the moment of the evil masters of the evil controllers of the world, you know, I call them the predator class, whatever you want, predators, the powers that be. Yeah. And so you'd be sitting around your long table in your dark castle, and you know, with the flunkies and all the candle lights, and you know, being given balls,
$1 million, yeah, like
being given your balls of blood, and you know,
yeah,
babies and stuff, and. So you'd be making this plan. You're thinking, okay, so we've got to take away their, we've got to starve them, and we've got to poison them, and we've got to just turn them into slaves. But how are we going to get away with it? They're never going to let us take away their farmland. They like farmers. They like farming. They like their food. They're never going to accept us telling them you can't travel, you can't eat meat. They're just not going to wear it. How are we ever going to do it? No, let's give up now. Let's just let them do what they want to do. But they've got away with it. I mean, there's been so little pushback on 15-minute cities, on the war on petrol cars or gas-powered cars, as you call them, on the war on air travel. Everyone's just gone, yeah, well, I guess, you know, if that's the way it's going, you know, what can we do?
Well, the way they do it, 1917, Vladimir Ilyich Lenin actually said, chaos, the more chaos, the better, the worse, the better. And the idea is the more crises and emergencies you have, the more economic crisis, the more debt, the more spending, the more inflation, you can then justify universal basic income, which is what they hugely want. This, and you have people like Naval Harari, the advisor to the World Economic Forum, calls us useless eaters. And they have two goals for us. Give us psychotropic drugs to numb us and make us compliant.
Soma.
Give us video games. They actually, and that's not me saying it. You can watch interviews where he talks about those exact things. So one of the ways they do it, by the way, is by crushing the middle class. You get into a new form of medieval serfdom. NBC News, when they were talking about Bill Gates, when they announced he was the number one farmland owner, they actually said, Bill Gates is not the farmer here. He's not the one in overalls. And they detailed cases of farmers who once owned land, lost the land due to government compliance, climate regulations. Bill Gates' equity asset firm buys up it, but they get to stay on their farm and they get to till the soil for the benefit of Bill Gates. That's a coming neo-feudalism. That's where we are. And And what they do it is they need that chaos. They need to look back at 9/11. The two most loathsome figures. And, you know, you talked to me 20 years ago. I voted for George W. Bush. Can't stand the guy. He's one of those dark forces in the universe. His presidency was a disaster for America. He's evil. Dick Cheney, absolutely evil. Every Republican nominee, from Mitt Romney to John McCain to Bob Dole to George H.W. Bush, you can have them all. That's why I have a soft spot for Trump, because people are like, oh, can you believe Donald Trump? It's like, compare him to every Republican nominee since Reagan. I'll take Trump any day. Yeah. And I think I'll take a convict Trump. My goal, my hope was, by the way, that Trump, he could be convicted, put thrown in jail, and he can't vote for himself, but he could still run for office. There's no prohibition of a convicted felon running for office. And I would absolutely support him in that scenario. I actually supported an old congressman, James Traficant, who was running out of jail. He couldn't vote for himself. But you know, you have to see who the establishment hates. That's what I like. Yeah. I agree with you. There's a lot about Trump that you have to be worried about. But anyway, I digress. So that's where we are with this whole it's not even New World Order anymore, but it is the Great Reset. I detail all this in my book. And I think the greatest thing I can say here is in America, the pushback to COVID came from the lowest level of politics, angry parents at school board meetings against transgender ideology, against critical race, and against COVID theater, the masking of first, second graders. They were declared domestic terrorists by the Biden administration. They were willing to get arrested. They shut down school board meetings. They toppled the Democrat Party machine in several key elections, including in my state of Virginia, terrified the National Democratic Party, which was all pro-lockdown. The New York Times reported they did focus groups, and they realized even the Democratic base was getting tired of the mask mandates and the vaccine mandates and lockdowns. Overnight after those elections, every major city from Baltimore, Washington, Philadelphia, LA, San Francisco, Chicago lifted all the COVID restrictions. Elections have consequences. Low-level politics has consequences. And now I would submit what's happening in Europe right now. That's the greatest hope. If you don't want to eat the frickin' bugs and the lab-grown meat, support what the farmers are doing at the Brussels headquarters in EU. Support what the farmers are doing throughout Paris and in Germany and Poland and Romania and Spain and Sweden. All these reports keep coming in. Great videos. This is where the rubber hits the road. And the greatest mistake we made as a world, and you mentioned it earlier, was in March and April of 2020. We should have had mass resistance. They never could have got it. But we complied. And we deserve our fate after that. But now it's time to fight back.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I had a flashback. And I think a lot of people are in denial about what happened. But the idea that we lived in a period in very recent memory where if you had a relative, your mum or your dad was dying, you weren't allowed to spend the last moments with them. The government actually said no, or the medical system said no.
They said no, you had no choice, yes.
It's just bizarre, isn't it? I mean, I doubt even in Stalin's Russia that happened. I mean,
no, and because I got Klaus Schwab made the Czech Republic. What's his name? Klaus, the former president. Klaus something. Not Schwab. I got it in my head.
So many Klauses.
Well, the former president.
Not Klaus Barbie. It was Klaus.
I can't believe I can't think of his last name right now. Well, he actually directly.
Václav Klaus? No. Was it Václav Klaus?
No, not Václav Klaus, but the former president of Czech Republic. I can't. Oh. Not Václav Klaus. Now you got.
I know. Sorry.
Someone will know. Everyone will know. But he had an interview, and I included in my book, where he literally said, this is the idea, you weren't allowed to congregate, you weren't allowed to meet. He said, this is exactly what we experienced growing up under Soviet communism. He saw it just, boom, eyes wide open of what exactly they were doing to us.
Yeah, yeah. Did you get any traction with your book? Did you find that, were you reaching out to people that, were you turning the public opinion round or not really?
Yeah, I mean, I did over 2 dozen speaking tour, including London, Canada, throughout the United States. And what I found is the red pilling, and not necessarily from my book, but I detail it. People were just, former liberals, former Democrats, were just eyes opened, and it just keeps going. And a lot of it had to do with the COVID. The greatest red pill, it may surprise you, at least in America, are liberals who had bad reactions to the COVID shots or boosters, which were mandated for them if they lived in a city. If you wanted to go to the gym or go to a restaurant, if your gym was even open during COVID, the last thing you'd want is people working out. Stay home and order greasy fat food and watch Netflix. That's how you stay healthy during a pandemic. To a person, when you look at people like Jimmy Dore and Naomi Wolf and many others, they will talk about, not some of them personal, some of them just their friends, people who had bad reactions to this vaccine started asking questions. And when they realized they weren't allowed to ask questions, it made them ask a lot more questions about lockdowns, about mask mandates. People like Jimmy Dore, who was is a left-wing progressive, always criticized the Democrat nominee as not being liberal enough. This is a guy who's on YouTube, and he's been on Tucker Carlson a few times back when on Fox News. But he actually openly says, until COVID came along, I believed my government. I believed in Russiagate. I believed in climate change. And now he's like, everything's open. He's now doing, this was a guy who was far left. He's now doing videos about the greening of the earth. He's having climate skeptics like Tony Heller on his show. It's incredible red pilling across the board. Even to Russell Brand, even if he's controlled opposition, he's completely backed away. He'll say, even if you don't believe in climate change, I just think it's important. But he goes on and then rants about all the problems. Naomi Wolf now, a former Clinton Gore advisor, says that the Green New Deal and all this that they're doing is fascism. And she calls it, she's retweeting climate communism. These were leftists. These were progressives. These were the people that 5 years ago wouldn't give us the time of day. They're now literally leading the way. And they're the ones I look to because they're like, it's like, you know, that red pilling, they're new converts. It's great to watch them, to watch, you know, them go through the whole process of realizing that they've been lied to on issues like climate change.
That's good to hear, Mark, because it was quite lonely for us, wasn't it? Of those.
It was, yes.
We did feel like we were sort of outliers, let's say.
And here's the thing. When I go speak to a crowd now, even if it's like a mixed crowd, not conservative, you know, types, I'll say things like, if you see what they did in COVID, right? All the scientists who couldn't speak were deplatformed, canceled, defunded, uninvited to conferences. That's exactly what they did in COVID, in climate change. And people will nod their heads. They get it. So when they hear 97%, they know it's horseshit. We had here in America, Joe Biden, the first year in office, he got rid of fired like 55 science advisory board scientists from the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency Advisory Committee, because he knew they wouldn't agree with their scientific claims and their policies. So you literally have a situation where Joe Biden, the New York Times, any media can claim, wow, Joe Biden's environmental policies are so good, he has 100% agreement with all the EPA science advisors. Well, yeah, you can get 100% agreement when you literally fire and remove every scientist who disagrees with you. People, it's resonating with them now. They see what happened with Anthony Fauci. They see what happened with NIH and our public health. They see what happened with public health in England. And they know no dissent was allowed. So now I can talk to the most liberal, you know, you can talk to people who understand COVID. And even if they're liberal and everything else, that's your opening on climate. And it works every time. I've never had pushback to that. People realize it. That appeal to authority that they loved in the climate debate is gone for the middle, the great political middle. Because you can no longer say, well, the NIH or public health says the following. People are like, oh, well, that was bullshit. And that's where you come. So, by the way, one last point, the climate debate, to the extent that there's any science or policy debate, it's gone completely insane. You have a study in out of England, actually, the journal PLOS, human breath contributes to climate change. Africans warm the air more than women. I'm sorry, more than Asians. Women warm the air more than men, the agents in our breath. You have the bans wake up every day in America. There's gas stove bans. There's wood-fired pizza oven bans they're proposing. They're going after ceiling fans. They're going after gas-powered lawn equipment. In some states, they're threatening jail time for people using a gas-powered leaf blower still after they're banned. I mean, they've gone completely insane. It's all identity politics now in terms of these all the scientific claims now. NASA scientists, climate change is caused by white supremacy. You have scientists in the University of Rhode Island in the United States. The data is racist. You can't trust it anymore. It's based on white colonial science. I mean, it's just completely bonkers. But that's what happened. They don't really care. It's not going to convince anyone. They don't need to convince you because this is all being imposed on us without any vote of democracy.
Mark, we'll have to get you back. You've been great. Well, tell us where we can get your books and where we can find you.
Okay, well, thanks. My website's climatedepot.com. Recently redesigned. It used to look like a 90s internet site, and now it looks like an early 2000s internet site. So it's updated. Same theme, but it's all a lot cleaner. I'm at Twitter, at Climate Depot. My book is Great Reset, Global Elites in the Permanent Lockdown. And I don't know what you think of Alex Jones, but he endorsed my book on the Great Reset over his own book on the Great Reset. And you can actually go to Amazon and read reviews where it's like, Alex Jones referred this book to me. Anyway, he wrote a book on it too. So did Glenn Beck. But mine's the one with the red cover. And I think mine's the most entertaining of the three books. I've read the three. We're the three competing books out there on the Great Reset. And my hope is to be in Europe for the last week in May at this World Health Organization meeting. I'm hoping they don't know who I am and I can get credentialed. I'm going to go cover the pandemic treaty and also how climate change is merging into the public health threat, which is their stated goal.
Oh, well, I hope I get to see you, Mark. And thank you for your service, as you say
well,
in America.
Thank you. I look forward to Watermelon, your book coming back out, the reissue. You got to come back.
Oh, yeah. Well, it'll only be, just a couple of new chapters. But yeah, I think it's people have been asking for it and you can't get it because that's the thing. If we've been writing books in back in the day about how the world was doomed and it was all our fault and the polar bears were dying,
yeah,
we'd have been minted.
Yes. And what's funny is you mentioned Paul Ehrlich, who, of course, the original doomsdayer, wrote The Population Bomb 1968. He was just on 60 Minutes last year, 2023. And basically, and they ask him, like, well, what about all your failed predictions? He made failed predictions that expired in the 70s, like 1980s, that oil would run out. And he's like, well, all my predictions could come true. I just, the timelines are still happening. He's never back down. The media still cites him as an expert. So no matter how wrong you are, if you're wrong on the science but right on the politics, you're golden. You can. You just want to get that right. We've always had it wrong. We've been right on the science but wrong on the politics. So we've always been vilified and crushed and canceled.
Yeah, exactly. Well, have a look at Mark's site. It is absolutely brilliant. It's a great aggregator of all the kind of news on the climate insanity. If you've enjoyed this podcast, do please support me. You get early access if you subscribe to me on Patreon, on Subscribestar, on Substack, on Locals, or you can buy me a coffee. And don't forget to support my sponsors. Thanks again, Mark Morano. Great to have you on the show. Hope to see you soon and come back. You've been great.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah. Thanks a lot.